Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Allison Keyes. A court ruling allowing a pregnant woman to have an abortion in Texas because her fetus is at severe risk of death has been put on hold by the Texas Supreme Court. Kate Cox, already a mother of two, says carrying the child to term might hurt her chances of having another baby. KTVT-TV's Jack Fink.
The attorney general said the judge's ruling was wrong under the law. The state bans most abortions with the exception of the mother's life being at risk, and the law allows doctors to be prosecuted, fined, and have their licenses taken away. Another law allows private citizens to file civil lawsuits against those who perform abortions and facilitate them.
Now to the Israel-Hamas war, as the health ministry won by the militant group says the death toll in Gaza is now 17,700. The UN says many Palestinians haven't eaten anything for several days. 1,200 died in the Hamas terror attack on Israel October 7th. CBS's Blackburn with the latest.
At the UN in New York, the U.S. vetoed a Security Council resolution calling for an end to the fighting. The U.S. instead arguing for humanitarian pauses.
We do not support calls for an immediate ceasefire. This would only plant the seeds for the next war, because Hamas has no desire to see a durable peace.
Turning now to Russia, where President Putin has made a big announcement. CBS's Beth Noble with more.
His announcement that Russian President Vladimir Putin will run for re-election is terrible news for Ukraine. There's no indication whatsoever that President Putin is going to stop the war or try to negotiate some kind of settlement anytime soon. He's simply staked too much of his personal prestige on taking Ukraine to do anything but keep the fighting going, even if it looks now like a military stalemate.
Coalfield development is restoring jobs and land in West Virginia. CBS's Mark Strassman.
Training more than 2,500 people, creating 800 new jobs and 72 new businesses. A program delivering with roughly $20 million in federal grants.
Instead of waiting around for something to happen, we're trying to generate our own hope.
Hope now for some suffering dementia, CBS's Willie James Inman.
Light therapy appears to improve some symptoms associated with Alzheimer's. That's according to researchers in China. They discovered light therapy significantly improved sleep, along with alleviating patients' depression and agitation.
It's finally here.
So close, but we were so distant.
10-time Grammy winner Nicki Minaj's fifth studio album, Pink Friday 2, dropped yesterday on her 41st birthday. This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform, you need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Fewer college students are taking foreign language courses. A new report warns this could affect how well students are prepared for the future. Here's Joe Ullery.
The Modern Language Association survey finds fewer students chose to study languages other than English between 2016 and 2021. Nationally, enrollment dropped 17% during the same period. Professor of Spanish and Portuguese Deborah Cohn says the tanking numbers could spell trouble for students applying for college and have implications for equity.
In Indiana, between 2016 and 2021, they dropped from 42,000 to 30,000. So that is a drop in that 5-year period, that is a drop of 29.4%.
Cohn points out that foreign language studies provide cultural knowledge and open doors for many types of jobs. The report says adequate funding for language problems and support from the schools are needed to help keep them going. According to the report, making foreign language courses more career-focused might attract more students. Cohn underscores that the nation is becoming more diverse, so it's important to understand and be able to connect with others.
We need people who can speak languages, who can offer social services, legal services, medical services within this country.
One thing that might turn the ship, according to Cohn, is getting students involved in studying languages at all levels, especially when they are young. The report also recommends schools building partnerships with multicultural organizations. I'm Joe Ullery. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
45 this afternoon, under mainly cloudy skies, southwest winds 10 to 20 miles an hour. Slight chance for scattered showers tonight, 29. High of 33 tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 43 degrees.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Hey, everybody. I'm Charlie Behrens, and welcome to the Cripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. And our studio is powered by Everlight Solar. Hey, folks. How we doing? Welcome to another episode of the Cripescast. Today, we are talking about salt. Salt on the roads, not in your Bloody Mary. Although it is the same salt in your Bloody Mary. Isn't that interesting? What is all this salt doing? Colleen, do you ever wonder that when you're driving down the road and it's cold out and you're thinking of slipping and sliding off the road? Do you ever wonder what that salt is doing aside from keeping you on the road?
No.
Yeah. Well, most people never wonder that either. But yeah. Today we are figuring it out. I'll give you the long and the short of it, folks. Essentially, that adding so much salt to the environment really changes our water from being fresh water to being brackish water. And that has huge impacts on the fish and biodiversity and all that sort of stuff. And additionally, so that's for the hippies out there who are big into the environment. But for you folks who like your money and like not paying taxes, salt destroys your cars and the infrastructure over time. It's rust. It's sort of your potholes, all that sort of stuff.
So it's the main cause. No, it's not actually, but it causes construction season.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you don't like construction season,
yeah,
you don't like salt.
Yeah, but at the same time, very good point, Colleen. At the same time, everyone likes being safe on the roads. So today we're talking with Allison Madison. She is with Wisconsin Saltwise, and she is educating people on the harmful effects of road salt. Obviously, we all know the benefits. When you're driving down the road and it's cold out and the roads are slippery, you're like, God, give me all the salt in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the truth of it is one teaspoon of salt pollutes 5 gallons of water. And for every $1 of salt used, we do about $10 of damage to our infrastructure. So, you know, in talking with Allison, it's not really a question of should we stop using salt. We are using salt and going to continue to use salt, but it's are we overdoing it? You know, if we did less, if we made brines, could we save money in the short term by using less of the actual salt and money in the long term by also using less salt?
Yeah. So
we kind of do a deep dive into it. And that is coming up in short order here. In other news, I went to the Packers game.
Yeah.
I went to the Packers game. Colleen invited herself.
Yeah.
We went to the Packers game together, folks.
I was under the guise that I was going to see Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
I would have seen her more if I just stayed home.
Yeah, you would have. Because they never showed her on the Jumbotron. Colleen was coming back from Minnesota.
And I jokingly texted you, hey, you got an extra ticket to not Taylor Swift, the Packers game.
Yeah. And my mom had just had to drop out of going to the game. I was going to go with my mom, but she broke her knee walking. Like she tripped. She
was kneecap.
She wasn't just walking. Yeah, she broke her kneecap. Yeah, it took a hard fall. And she was bummed. I think she wanted to see Taylor Swift too.
Yeah.
Also the Packers. But she was bummed. But you know what? I will say this. In Wisconsin, if you gotta mess up your leg, you know, actually my dad had knee surgery recently. So now they both got bum knees. But if you gotta mess up your knee, you do it during the winter. You know, that is the time. You don't want to.
Yes and no, though, because I had my knee surgery in the winter and it's really slick. And like if mine, I couldn't put any weight on it. So I had like crutches. Like, yes, do it in the winter because you're bored.
Yeah, you're bored.
But I imagine it's slick out.
Well, just put more salt on the road.
Don't.
But, and that's how we take it full circle, no, folks.
Don't do that.
There it is. Look at that transition. And with that, folks, let's get to my conversation with Allison Madison of Wisconsin Saltwise. Well, thanks so much for joining us. So where are you chiming in from again? You're coming from Madison?
So I'm down in Madison right now. Yeah, I grew up in northern Wisconsin.
Oh, where in northern Wisconsin?
I grew up in Bloomer. Have you heard of it?
Bloomer.
Way up there. Yeah.
No. And no? Now it's not often, you know, been doing this for quite some time now, and it's not often I'm hearing a brand new city. You know what? That's a lie. Every now and again, one comes up, like every few months. So where is it on the hand?
So Bloomer, yes. Bloomer is about here. It's just north of Eau Claire. So Chippewa, and Kugels. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've probably been right around there. So how far away is it from Chippewa Falls?
It's just like 10 miles just down the road.
Just down the main drag or?
Main drag, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, 53, yeah. So I grew up in Bloomer. 3,000 people, more cows than people. I mean, it's true for a lot of Wisconsin towns.
I was going to say, yeah, that sounds impressive, but it's
more often than not. It's, yeah.
So, and then what? When did you move out of there?
Yeah, so I graduated from high school and went to school in Minnesota. And then, you know, I got teased for my Wisconsin accent enough that I decided I had to lose that. So
wait, in Minnesota, they teased you for your Wisconsin accent?
I know, right? People from Iowa I was friends with.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's what you get for being friends with people from Iowa. You know,
I know. Idiots out walking around. Come on. Who are they to tell me I don't talk right?
So you got, that's nice. So what'd you study over? Was this the University of Minnesota?
I went to St. Olaf. So good Norwegian, you know, being a bully.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I studied chemistry and environmental science.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So very passionate about, you know, taking care of the planet. I grew up, you know, outside a lot in a small town, running around all the time, heading down to the water, hanging out, fishing, swimming, everything. So, when I learned more about some of the problems in the world, I'm like, I want to do something about that.
Well, we're actually dealing with sort of a chemistry problem in this podcast, right? It's chemistry, salt and water. Yeah. It's very basic chemistry. That's about the level of chemistry that I dipped out at. You know?
Yeah, no, I get it. I'm kind of nerdy, studying chemistry and soil science too. But I talk to plow operators every day and I try to make the chemistry kind of fun for them. And sometimes they'll tell me that I'm good at my job. So I feel like that's a win.
That's a big win.
Yeah. Yeah. So all the salt that we put down on our streets in the winter, on winter roads, highways, parking lots, sidewalks, all of that salt, if it's doing its job, right, it's melting snow. And that means the salt is combining with that water and the water stays salty then. So we are trying to promote best practices so that people are using salt just as needed. And we want to encourage the mechanical removal of snow. So doing a better job plowing, better job out there with our shovels. And one of our slogans is shovel more, salt less, right? If you get out, shovel early enough and you might not even need salt. And that helps protect our drinking water and our lakes and streams and all the critters that live in them.
And let's also take a step back and tell everybody what your organization is and how long you've been there and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So I am the program manager at Wisconsin Saltwise. So Saltwise started in the Madison area with the city, the county, the wastewater treatment plant, the water utility, all saying, we kind of have a problem here. We're all seeing the amount of salt go up in our lakes, our streams, our drinking water wells, our wastewater. Maybe we need to come together and work on this. So they formed this local partnership called Wisconsin Saltwise, and they started doing education with plow operators and private contractors who do winter maintenance. And then all those folks are saying, yeah, like this makes sense. We see that we're overplowing salt. We see all the damage that salt does to our vehicles and our roads and our bridges. It doesn't make sense. And the general public doesn't understand that. So if people feel like, you know, it's my right, I should be able to go out to, you know, Target or Walmart at, you know, 10 p.m. It doesn't matter if it's a crazy snowstorm. And that puts a lot of pressure on our plow operators to like, try to keep roads really clear all the time. And so they said, you need to do more kind of public education. So that's why Saltwise started. And I was hired in 2020 to really start working statewide around education and training.
One of the biggest or most interesting facts when doing research is that
one teaspoon of salt, we're polluting 5 gallons of water.
And so that's for the people who care about the environment, and a lot of people don't. So what's the financial one? I thought this was even more interesting.
Yeah, the financial piece is for every dollar that we spend on salt, we're doing about $10 of damage to our infrastructure. So we look at, you know, trucks putting down, you know, a ton of salt right now that costs roughly for the state, for our DOT, the cities, municipalities, counties, that it's about $100 at just a little under, like about $90 on average across the state for a ton of salt. And so that's doing like $900,000 of damage.
And so if I'm a kind of a skeptical person who's like, oh, the salt's fine, they're probably thinking like, well, you can't put a price on the lives salt saves. So is there an equivalent to salt, something that does just as good of a job, but is better for the environment, but perhaps it's more expensive?
Yeah. So right now, the best practices out there where people are seeing salt reductions and seeing no change to kind of level of service, you know, we can still have clear, passable roads. It's not necessarily a different product. It's just utilizing best practices in that mechanical removal. So different plow blades, sectional blades. So instead of like one straight blade, different sections allow the blade to be a little bit more responsive to the pavement surface if it's not even, and get a better scrape. So if you get a better scrape, you've got less material you have to salt right after and remove. There are also blades that have some rubber in them. So it works a little bit more like a squeegee, and that can really get down, move a lot of material. And then even though it's salt, salt brine is kind of magic because if you have brine, you've already taken the salt, you've put it in water, it's dissolved and broken apart. So again, watch out for the chemistry, Charlie, but salt is sodium chloride. Okay. So those two pieces, when you mix salt into water, they break apart and they individually are kind of what drive the melting. They have to be broken apart first. So if you break them apart in brine, by making that brine, you put that brine down on the road, on the snow, it begins melting immediately. It's kind of like using lighter fluid. And really, that's what we want. Everybody wants immediate melting. So using brine can help us get faster melting with less total salt, which means less corrosion potential, but also we can still have pretty clear roads.
So is there a reason like everybody isn't using brine right now?
So yeah, I'd say the biggest reason is kind of getting started, like, you know, capital costs of making any changes to equipment are real, right? And also I think there's that, you know, well, this is the way we've always done it, right? Why should we change and kind of use something different if our system, you know, seems to be working. But we are actually seeing widespread movement, despite those two hurdles, widespread movement to utilize brine. The DOT, Wisconsin DOT, has been working with counties. So in Wisconsin, we have 72 counties, right? And they individually maintain the highways in their counties. So the DOT has been supporting them by helping them get high capacity brine makers. And then municipalities, more and more municipalities are getting brine makers. I work with universities like UW-Eau Claire. They're making their own brine on campus. UW-Whitewater has been making their own brine for like 6-7 years. So this is really, really taking off. People are using brine before the storm. In Milwaukee, you probably see that, right? Especially Milwaukee County will put down those lines of brine on the road, right? So it kind of works like oiling your skillet. You know, if you put a little oil down first and then you fry your egg, spatula comes right off. But if you forget to do that, you're scraping and scraping afterwards, right? So that idea that if you prevent the bond from forming, you really end up ahead. And then brine can also be added to salt to help it stick in place. So that reduces the bounce and scatter effect, keeps the salt where we want it to be, activates it. It's working faster.
Yeah, well, that's great because, you know, there's quite a few issues with salt that, you know, we've kind of mentioned. One I was curious about, you say it affects roads, roads and bridges. Would it be safe to say that salt is helping cause potholes as well?
Yeah. Salt is corrosive, right? We might make that connection with like our vehicles, but salt degrades the roads. Anytime that you have like a little crack or a break, salt gets in there and it just makes it worse. So it, you know, prematurely ages, just accelerates the deterioration of roads. Anytime, you know, we're inconvenienced in the summer because of road repairs, it's like salt, you know, accelerated that.
Got it. And then also, you know, in the Midwest, we obviously say, watch out for deer. Deer really like licking salt. For anyone with a salt lick, they know that. Mm-hmm. Do they, since this is the same salt we're putting on our tables, does it attract more deer and animals to the roadways?
That's a really good question, Charlie. I haven't heard so much of that in Wisconsin. I mean, I feel like there are so many deer as it is going across the roads. But I have heard in Alaska that moose will come out to roads to lick the salt. I think there might be, you know, less salt up there.
Okay, gotcha. Yep. Gotcha. Yeah. You know, I'm just spitballing here, just trying to think on that. So what is the actual chemistry of the salt once it gets in the water? Because it never leaves the water.
Yeah.
Is that true? Yeah. I mean, at some point, are we going to have sort of, are our rivers going to be the brackish water you see in Florida, you know, where it's half saltwater, half fresh?
We're headed in that direction, unfortunately. So, yeah, I think some people say, oh, well, what does it matter? You know, that water's going down to the ocean. The ocean's salty, but takes a while for it to get there, right? So we definitely see throughout Wisconsin, our water is not as fresh as it used to be. So naturally, if we look at salt again, the sodium and the chloride are the two components of that. So when salt dissolves, we look at them individually. So people will sometimes say, oh, the chloride levels are rising or the sodium levels are rising. So that's just a little bit of background there. But yeah, both of those components of salt are increasing in our drinking water wells, which means in some areas, especially like Madison, our drinking water is getting to the point where some people can taste the salt in it. And then our streams every year kind of getting saltier, lakes every year getting saltier. And especially in the spring months, when we got a lot of salty snow melt heading into those streams, we see big spikes in sodium and chloride levels. So naturally we'd be between 0 and 10. If I look at, let's say the chloride, for instance, and we have streams that are in the hundreds, even the thousands. I think where you are in Milwaukee, some streams have gone up to even 10,000 milligrams per liter of chloride. So that's from 0 to 10 up to 10,000. And that's not good for any of the living things in there. So we're seeing changes in what can live and survive in our streams based on how salty they are. And some research in Milwaukee has actually looked at even down to the bacteria that live in the stream. So some streams in Milwaukee have gotten so salty that the bacteria living there more closely now resemble the bacteria that live in like the Great Salt Lake.
Wow.
But I want to say it's not all bad news, Charlie. It's really incredible what we've seen happen. A number of municipalities have been dialing in their salt use and working on that mechanical removal, utilizing brine. And they are dropping salt use by 50%, sometimes even 70%. Cudahy, just south of Milwaukee, has dropped their salt use by about 70% in the last several years.
That's great. And what is that process been like in Cudahy, for instance? Like what have they done there to acknowledge it, and what has that process been like to sort of convince or just inform?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the first thing is, I told you that sometimes making these changes can be expensive, but the first step is calibrating your equipment. So a lot of times when people put salt down, you know, especially back in the day and sometimes in smaller communities, it's just, well, you know, here are the keys, go, you know, put down the salt. And you don't necessarily know how much salt is going down. So calibrating trucks is a way to measure, actually literally weigh, you know, how much salt is coming out as the auger spins. Weigh that. Do a little math to calculate how much salt per lane mile is going down. And then based off of that, kind of make adjustments. You know, are we going to be in setting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, kind of what makes sense? And then newer trucks really allow you to dial that in where you can say, okay, we want it to be, you know, 200 pounds per lane mile. So some of the trucks that Cudahy had, initially, they thought they were putting down, you know, 300 pounds a lane mile. They were putting down 800 pounds a lane mile. So it's just like crazy when, as they made that little adjustment, brought down their salt use, just calibration alone reduced their salting by over 40%. And then they were able to save those dollars and reinvest them in their fleet and start utilizing brine and made even further reductions.
Yeah, because, you know, what I find most interesting about the sort of salt thing is it's kind of a microcosm for like every other environmental issue that we have, mm-hmm. which is it's the way we've done it. So you have you have the pattern already, or the habit established, and also the immediate cost of not just doing something differently, but the cost of perhaps using a different product or changing your system. And we often see that as a bigger hurdle, even when we logically know that the future cost is going to be higher.
Greater.
You know, and what is that? What is that about human nature that's like how we interact? Because I mean, it's not just them. I mean, it's all of us, right? Every time I get into my car or turn a light on or whatever, you know, in some way that this is creating more greenhouse gas or whatever, but it's hard to get people to think like doing this now will like, that's tomorrow's problem. You know, how have you found, what are effective tools in your mind to sort of break those natural human inclinations?
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think about that all the time, both in terms of chemistry. In chemistry, we call it activation energy. How much energy does it take to like break the bond and move to maybe something that'll be easier and, you know, in the end, but like anything you have changed, oh, I got to do something different. There's resistance to that, right? And I think that, you know, we want to do good things, but we also have a lot on our plate. And so one of my bosses would always say, you got to give people the easy button. You know, you're not going to get them to do this if it's really tricky. And I also think that, you know, evolutionarily, we're humans, right? We're animals. We're just trying to survive. And we're thinking about what is going to help me today. How do I get my food, my water, take care of my kids? You know, our brains aren't really designed to think about seven generations down the line.
Yeah.
But I think that for me, one of the biggest things is like tapping into kind of that human connection with people. Like I said, a lot of us, we're trying to do the best we can, and nobody wants to be, you know, polluting the water. And a lot of the plow operators I talk to, I mean, they're big outdoorsmen, right? They love hunting and fishing. And they feel this pressure, right? Expectations people have, people who don't understand that that salt doesn't just disappear. It all goes somewhere. It goes into our water. So, you know, they want to do good things. And I feel like my job is getting around and talking to people, different highway departments. So it's up in Bayfield, and we're talking with Bayfield County guys. Some of them have been plowing for, you know, 29, 30 years. And we're just talking about, okay, what is your system like right now? What was it like 10 years ago, 20 years ago? Having them acknowledge that, yeah, things have changed in the last 20 and 10 years. They're going to continue to change. Mm-hmm. How can we, you know, be open to that? What's working, what's not in your current system? What do you think could make things better? So I kind of present, yeah, there's a reason why we should think about change, reasons they care about. And then it's not prescriptive. There's no like one solution, one size fits all, but having people help be a part of that brainstorming and creative problem solving has been, I think, really successful and really fun.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. That's the way it's worked out. And that the way you're describing it, I think is a successful, I mean, it's successful clearly, because it's working, but it's also different than the way I think like a lot of environmental movements have been in the past, which is we know more than you. And so therefore mm-hmm. you need to listen to us. And I think part of the reason I think we're in the situation we're in is like human nature acts the way we expect it to. And yet, because some people have information, they think just by saying that and demanding that it be done, it change. And we've learned time and time again that it doesn't matter what the facts are.
Yeah.
People go off of emotion. And so instead of thinking you're going to fix this, whatever evolutionary trend led to that, you know, you have to play that human nature game. And so it's that. So anyway, but it's also really practical. Like these are the people who have been doing it forever and know all the ins and outs and all the mm-hmm. problems. And so, you know, you going in and listening first and then maybe suggesting those ideas, I feel like is a sort of a system we can borrow for other environmental issues. Trying to fix an issue can borrow what you're doing.
Yeah, it's acknowledging, I mean, these are practitioners with, like I said, years of experience, right? I remember I was in Fond du Lac last fall doing a training with the city of Fond du Lac, and one of the plow operators had been working there for the city for 40 years. So I'm not even 40 years old. I mean, I'm getting close, but it's just like acknowledging there's a ton of knowledge here, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I know some things, but I don't know it all. And they're the ones who are going to be doing this work. So it just makes sense to, connect with them. They're the ones who can really figure out maybe like what should be piloted, you know, what makes sense for the next step. And we're not going to change anything completely overnight, right? It's just about empowering people to take those baby steps and encouraging them. So I think sometimes my job is almost just like being a cheerleader, right? Like I'll come in and talk about this is a problem. Here's some of the data that shows us that these are the trends that we're seeing. But I also love sharing some of the best practices or the innovation that's out there. So if someone's using a new, you know, type of truck or a different brine blend, you can mix different things in your brine, believe it or not. Or, you know, just whatever's working or a change in the policy, sharing those stories. So people are like, oh, like that's working down the road. Yeah, maybe we could try that here.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. The Texas Supreme Court has put a judge's ruling on hold, allowing a woman to have an abortion despite the state's near total ban, thanks to an intervention by State Attorney General Ken Paxton. KHOU-TV's Mia Gradney.
A lower court granted her permission to get an abortion, but Paxton appealed to the state Supreme Court, saying she hadn't proved her case satisfies the requirement for a medical emergency exemption to the abortion ban.
Israel's prime minister is speaking out about that failed UN Security Council resolution for an immediate ceasefire. The U.S. vetoed it. The BBC's Hugo Bechega.
American officials sharing the view of the Israelis that any kind of pausing hostilities right now, a ceasefire, would only benefit Hamas.
The campus at UNLV remains in shock after this week's mass shooting that left three professors dead and a fourth person injured. The gunman was shot and killed by two police officers. CBS News Brief, I'm Allison Keys.
Badgers volleyball team moves on to the Elite Eight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers women's volleyball team has had a great season, and now they're in the NCAA National Tournament. They beat Penn State 3-1 in front of over 7,000 at a sold-out packed UW Fieldhouse in Madison. Today, they face off against Oregon. The game's beginning at 7 o'clock. College basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers basketball team will take on the number one ranked team in the country, the Arizona Wildcats. That's this afternoon at 2:15 in Tucson. Wisconsin now ranked 23rd in the nation after beating Marquette and then Michigan State. They've come up a little short, though, in terms of points they could get from the free throw line. Head coach Greg Gard.
Getting there is probably priority number one. You know, we have to get there. You know, I'd like to get there 25 plus times a game. We were there. We did that against Northern Iowa. We got there a lot. You know, there's a lot of different ways to do that.
That's Wisconsin Badgers head coach Greg Gard. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. 45 this afternoon, under mainly cloudy skies, southwest winds 10 to 20 miles an hour. Slight chance for scattered showers tonight, 29. High of 33 tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 43 degrees.
Lofi's Holiday Sweepstakes is back. The Bakers of Country Hearts would like to put a little more jingle in your holiday this season by giving you a chance to win one of two $500 prizes or the grand prize of $1,000. Winners will each receive a check that can be used for travel, gifts, or just celebrating with family and friends. Whatever makes your holiday more jolly. For complete rules and to enter for your chance to win, visit facebook.com/Lofi's Bread.
This is Mean Gene Okerlund, and I'm talking with Brett Uhlberg, owner of Robert Hack Diamonds. Brett, I hear you pay cash for gold.
Not only gold, but silver, diamonds in any form like jewelry, teeth, coins, flatware.
Why should I sell you my gold?
Why not? Our store is the only store that recommends you shop around before you sell. This way you know you're getting the most money. But if Robert Hack Diamonds can't beat a competitor's offer on your scrap gold, we'll give you $20 just for letting us try.
Hey, what if I'm shy?
You? Well, at Robert Hack Diamonds, we sit with you at a table. We go through your items and make you an offer. You're not pressured, and we offer more on jewelry that we can resell.
Can I trade my gold for a new piece of jewelry?
Of course you can, and not only that, we can custom make a piece of jewelry using your gold and gems.
Hey, there you have it, folks. Sell your gold to my friends at Robert Hack Diamonds. Visit them on 76th and Layton in Greenfield. Robert Hack Diamonds, where they want your business.
It's fully leaded education talk. Hard facts with a humorous twist. Check out Busted Pencils, Tuesdays at 7 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK. and on the Civic Media app.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Hey, folks, I'm Charlie Behrens, and this is The Cripes Cast. And right now, I'm talking with Allison Madison from Wisconsin Saltwise about all the salt on our roads and what it's doing to our environment. Here it is. Are there different things we can do from a road construction standpoint? I read some roads they're piloting are porous, and that allows the concrete and the soil underneath to evaporate some of the salt as opposed to having it run off. What are the pros and cons of that sort of porous?
Yeah, so there's no real, like, almost like evaporation of salt. Like, it's all there. Once it goes down, it's going into our water. But if we can have, yeah, more water kind of infiltrate through the through that pavement, then you don't have as much water necessarily, like, on the surface to refreeze. And
oh, I see. That's it. That's what.
Does that make sense?
So yeah. So the soil can't filter out
the soil salt. Can't. Yeah, soil. So soil can't filter out the chloride. It actually does. It doesn't necessarily filter out, but soil grabs a hold of the sodium.
Okay.
So if we put salt down, you might see actually, like, along sidewalks sometimes, where if there's a lot of salt, the grass is dead.
Yeah.
Right along the sidewalk. And that is because salt's doing some damage to that vegetation, but it also changes the soil itself, and it makes it more sodic, more sodium, and some of the other nutrients go through. So there's, yeah, a lot going on there with that chemistry, but the chloride just moves right through. So we aren't really filtering any of that out. And even, like I said, that filtering, it's not like it disappears. It's there.
Gotcha.
So back to the permeable pavement, I'd say it's pretty new, and people are trying to understand, how does salt interact with the permeable pavement? And I was actually, I think this summer, listening to a scientist who was kind of doing some of the research around that. And they haven't totally, you know, determined, like, yes, no, like, good, bad. I think that, you know, permeable pavement isn't necessarily something we're going to see widespread on our highways, but some things that people have noted at kind of a larger level are, you know, darker pavements absorb more heat, right? And then melting happens there faster, and you can use less salt. So people would say, you know, we can maybe have, what if we had darker pavement? And a lot of times now our asphalt, it doesn't have as much tar in it. And I think that's, you know, environmentally kind of a win, but it also means that our roads kind of bleach out and they get gray faster. So that's led to more salt.
See, and that's what I'm
hearing from operators. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting one too, because from a climate change perspective, you want lighter colored roofs, and you want lighter colored roads to reflect the light back, as opposed to absorb it. So it's almost like now you're dealing with conflicting environmental issues there. It's a wild one. The other thing too is, you know, I don't want salt on the roads myself, because I'm thinking about, you know, walleyes, trout, you know, fishing, all that sort of stuff, how it affects it. But as soon as it's like snowing and 22 degrees, I'm like, give me that good salt. Yeah. Give me all that good salt. I mean, so I'm as bad as anyone else, but, you know, like when it's slippery and that rain, snow mixture.
Oh, the wintry mix, that's the worst.
Yeah. you want to know that you're going to be safe and all that. And so I think the question with the brine, and all that, is that as safe as the salt, like, for people who would be thinking in that? Or is there a way to even measure
it? I would say it's equally as toxic as the salt. So the benefit, though, is that by using brine, you're reducing the total amount of salt that goes down. So brine literally is just salt mixed with water. It's 23.3%, if you want to geek out, salt to water. So if you can use that brine, like let's say a little Pam cooking spray, right? If you use a little cooking spray on your skillet beforehand, just a little bit, and it makes a really big difference, you know, save it in the end quite a bit. So I would say that there are definitely misconceptions that brine is, you know, doing all this damage to your cars. But it literally is salt and water. And if we use less total salt, that means less total ability to do, you know, corrosive damage, right?
Are there any alternative? I've heard that breweries are using, have used the byproduct of the beer. What is that? And is that something that can be sort of scaled up?
Yeah. So there definitely are some kind of byproducts, agricultural byproducts. And I know the most popular one that people talk about is beet juice. And no one's just, you know, putting beet juice down on the roads. I want to put that out there to begin with. But the sugars from beet juices, the sugars from molasses, the sugars from beer malts can be mixed in with brine, with salt brine. So it's still salt, a little bit of sugar. But those sugars help the material stick. So especially if you do that brine before the storm, the sugars help it stick on the road. They also prevent refreeze. So think about like chomping into an ice cube or chomping into a popsicle, right? If you've got sugar mixed in with that water, it doesn't freeze as hard. It doesn't freeze as quickly. So if a plow puts down some brine with, you know, some sugar in it, and then it takes them 2, 3, 4 hours to get back, you know, to plow that road again, it's more likely that it'll still be kind of manageable, be able to move it. And then sugars also actually reduce corrosion. So that's definitely a win for us with our vehicles and roadways.
So, but is it expensive? Would you see the people using sugar in sort of a mass, DOT kind of way?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of counties are utilizing those sugars. I would say we see the most use of it when we have colder pavement temperatures. Sodium chloride brine, straight salt brine, is pretty effective. Or I should say straight salt is really effective down to 15 Fahrenheit, 1.5. And then when you start incorporating brine, you can maybe be using that down to, you know, close to zero, maybe like single digits. But what happens is salt is, it loses its effectiveness. It's just not as good at melting. It melts so slowly when you get to those colder temps that you need to use something else, or you're just going to keep throwing salt down. And you've probably seen that on sidewalks sometimes, right? The salt's sitting there if it's real cold.
So
by utilizing brines that have magnesium chloride or calcium chloride mixed in, those can be more corrosive. They can actually do more damage, but it's because they're like bigger, badder cousins of sodium chloride, and they work at colder temps. So if you use those other chlorides, you usually are mixing in another sugar to help counteract that corrosivity and, again, prevent the refreeze at those really cold temps.
Got it. And are those worse for the environment?
I'd say that the jury's kind of, you know, mixed on that. It's like scientists will look at, you know, individual, like how does it impact a trout? Magnesium chloride versus calcium chloride versus sodium chloride. How does it impact the salamander? Magnesium versus calcium versus sodium. And it's like, it's kind of mixed out there. Like some are better or worse for, you know, different organisms, but in general, they're all chlorides, right? So if we put more chloride down, chloride's toxic, it reduces the rates of growth, reduces rates of reproduction. It's a stressor on the system of these organisms that, like your walleye, right, that have evolved to live in freshwater.
Yeah. And are there any species that are extremely threatened from this that stand out more than other species?
Yeah, the general, think about the food web, little zooplankton. Those are tiny little guys that we generally don't think about too much, but they're food for small fish. Their populations we're seeing are changing quite a bit, being impacted at 50 milligrams per liter. So that's a lot less salty than a number of our streams today. So, and lakes too. So as zooplankton populations go down, it means there's less food going up the food chain. And also, if we don't have as many zooplankton, we don't have as many things eating algae. So that's creating more kind of green, murkier waters. Now that's in addition to, you know, phosphorus that's maybe coming off of, you know, farm fields or historical you know, like phosphorus that's in our lake sediment. So it's not great. It's like all these kind of interactions, right, happening together. And salt will also cause the release of other metals into water. So the lead crisis in Flint was actually exacerbated by the fact that they were drawing saltier water from the Flint River. Mm. So I know we still have some lead pipes, you know, in Milwaukee. But thankfully Milwaukee water is Lake Michigan, and Lake Michigan's a really, really big lake. So even though it's receiving over 1 million tons of salt a year, it has the ability to dilute a lot of that more than our smaller lakes and streams.
Maybe a weird question, but those zebra mussels I mentioned earlier are a big filter. That's their one benefit. And also mm-hmm. it's a detriment to the ecosystem.
Yeah.
Do they happen to filter out any of the chloride?
Not really. There's been look at like, well, could we use something that, you know, could filter out or like bioaccumulate, you know, that salt, mm-hmm. Like some different plants. But the problem is like, okay, so it's in the, even if it was in the body of like a filterer or like a plant that could do that. What are you going to do? You got to like remove that from the ecosystem, or when that organism dies or is eaten or whatever, it's still in that system.
Still in the system. And yeah. there's not, you know, desalinization again is a very expensive process that, you know, people in desert areas know, or Southern mm-hmm. California or whatever. Is that a viable option to help improve the waters as they are right now?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. Can we just like pull the salt out? So the answer is like technically yes, right? Like you said, you can remove salt from water, but it's really expensive. And in Madison, I know the wastewater treatment plant, they tried to run the numbers on this because they're receiving salt, not just in the winter, the spring from snowmelt, but they receive salt year round from water softeners, right? So all those water softeners that we like to, you know, filter out, take care of the hardness, right? All of that salt comes to a wastewater treatment plant, and then they can't filter it out. They can't remove it. So they're sending it all downstream, and they're like, this is not good. It's not good. So could we do it? Yes. Yes. Technically you can. But it would increase the sewerage rates by 500%. So it's not really feasible to do that. And it's so economically so expensive because it's really energetically expensive. It would take a lot of energy, which means a lot of greenhouse gases, to filter that out. It'd be running all of our wastewater through reverse osmosis. So it's not practical. And it's definitely not practical to think we're going to filter out the salt from our lakes or streams, because that would be killing everything in them. Just like you said, you know, the zebra mussels, right? They filter things out and it's not actually good. We mm-hmm. can't just like run all of our lakes through a filter.
Yeah. And that brings up the other thing I wanted to ask you about before we leave. Water softeners, for those maybe new homeowners or, you know, younger people who don't really know what a water softener is, can you explain that, explain why people use them, and why they're problematic?
Yeah, for sure. And I grew up, as I mentioned earlier, north of Eau Claire, and we didn't have a water softener. No one had a water softener because our water wasn't hard.
So, what is hard water?
Yeah. So you will see people in southern and eastern Wisconsin have water softeners, have this little like appliance, extra appliance in their basement. And the idea is it is taking care of water hardness. So hard water is water that has calcium and magnesium in it. And that's because the water has been sitting in calcium bedrock. Calcium carbonate is a fancy way to say limestone. So mm-hmm. if you have water sitting in limestone, it dissolves some of that calcium, magnesium. And then when it comes up into your house, that calcium magnesium can kind of crystallize with carbonate and reform that limestone, but now it's in your pipes or it's in your tea kettle. So you see that like white scale in your tea kettle, and that'd be happening in your hot water heater and your hot water pipe. So what people will do is they will send their hot water through a water softener, and you dump salt, like literally sodium chloride, table salt, but it's big, it's chunkier, it's maybe not as clean. Don't recommend eating it. You dump that in your water softener, and the fancy science in there, what's happening is the sodium takes the place of the calcium magnesium. So you don't have hard water. You have now softened sodium water, and that doesn't create the scale issue, the scale buildup. But all of that sodium, you know, it's your wastewater. It's going to go down to your wastewater treatment plant, and the chloride just goes straight there along with the calcium and magnesium. So again, nothing disappears, nothing goes away. We add it to our water. It sticks around in our water. So with water softeners, you really want to make sure that you don't have like the old clunker. The really old systems would just regenerate every like 2 or 3 days, regardless of how much soft water you've used. So it's kind of like you, Charlie, would say every 3 days, you're going to go down to Quick Trip. You're going to dump out any gas in your gas tank and fill it up again because it's been 3 days, you know, regardless of how many miles you've driven. So newer softeners will only regenerate when you have used up the soft water capacity. So kind of like your gas, you know, tank is empty and you're going to fill it up. That's what makes sense. And then just like our cars, you know, you can have a more or less efficient vehicle, more miles per gallon. Your water softener can be more efficient in terms of salt to softened water ratio. So definitely want to, you know, think about, do you really need a water softener? If so, kind of going with a really efficient model. And just like we have electric cars today are kind of, you know, taken off, that technology is making more and more sense. There are alternatives to traditional salt-based softeners that might make sense for people.
And I'm still kind of an idiot on this, so forgive me.
Oh, no, no.
I still understand, like, what is the problem with hard water? Is it bad for your health?
No, it's not bad for your health at all. Calcium, magnesium, your body actually needs them. It's mostly, and you're in Milwaukee, right? So you're drinking Lake Michigan.
I mean, I don't have a water softener. Yeah, I live in Milwaukee.
Yeah, so you don't need one because Lake Michigan is naturally pretty soft.
Okay.
But if you have spent time like closer to, I don't know, just inland a little bit, if I want to say even like, you know, Oshkosh or Whitewater, Madison, yeah. When people boil water, like in a kettle or teapot, they'll see this white scale kind of build up.
Oh, I got that on some of my cups sometimes.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. So that scale buildup is something that is not aesthetically pleasing to people. And maybe it starts to build up on your shower head. So I'd say that's the main thing. It's that concern of the scale buildup. And does it make your water heater not last as long? I know people are also thinking about, like, especially women or anybody who's got longer hair, you know, like hard water with your hair, like, does that feel good? So maybe you want softened water when you take a shower.
Oh, okay. And there's no conditioner or something that helps with that? I'm an idiot.
My grandmother actually used to, when I was a kid, she'd rinse my hair with vinegar water to kind of take like hard water off of it. Or I don't know if it was for that or she would say, but I was like, vinegar is what you use to cut the scale. So like my tea kettle every, you know, week or so, a few weeks, I'll just scrub it with some vinegar water and that scale comes right off.
Okay. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, there are other solutions for it beyond putting salt in the water, basically.
Yeah, there are other things to look at. I feel like it's kind of hard right now. It's like, I'm not going to tell everyone go out and buy an electric vehicle. Like, that might not make sense to you. So I don't want to tell everyone, like, oh, like, you got to disconnect your salt-based softener and try something that's a little uncertain, you know, but at least if you've got one, make sure it's running as efficiently as possible.
Well, very cool. Very cool. Is there anything that we haven't addressed yet that you think would be good? Something I missed? Any important facts?
Yeah, I'd say a couple things. So one would be that, you know, things that people in the general public, if you're not a snowplow operator, things that you can do would be just, you know, if you don't have to go somewhere in the middle or right after a snowstorm, like, stay home, stay safe. Get kind of cozy in the winter. And if you do have to go out, leave early and leave space, especially leave space for those, you know, between you and the plows. I know in St. Croix County, Hudson area, northwestern Wisconsin, there were 13 plow operators that got rear-ended last winter by vehicles, people who were driving too fast for the conditions. And, you know, that's scary and also really hurts morale for these people who are out and all crazy conditions, right? And crazy hours that they work in the winter to help us keep our roads clear. And I think we need to really support them and acknowledge the work they're doing instead of complaining that, you know, they haven't come to our street yet. So just kind of, I like to celebrate those public works guys and gals. There are some gals too.
That's a really good note. Yeah. I mean, you only talk about the plow guy, historically speaking, if your road's not.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Hi, I'm Emily from Weichert Realtors Lake Point in Madison. Your home, your property, your decision. At Weichert Realtors Lake Point, we'll guide you every step of the way, whether you're buying or selling a home or exploring commercial property. Your dream is within reach. You'll find our realtors love what they do, and more importantly, we think it's fun helping our clients achieve their goals. Who wouldn't want to do that every day? Give me a call at 608-721-8002. Weichert Realtors Lake Point, 2045 Atwood Avenue. Find more info at weichert-lakepoint.com.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.